Hello, everyone, and welcome to our very first vital Q&A call for the year 2018. All right. Sorry about that. I'm super excited to be here with you guys and answer your questions, help support you in whatever way you need. And the way that we're going to do it is I'm going to first check the Q&A where people would put questions in advance of the session. And that way we can get those answered first, and then we'll go ahead and take live questions. So let's see what we have here. We have a few people. Alex. What causes gum loss, spaces between the teeth, and ways to prevent gum loss, if any? Yeah, well, oftentimes that's a couple of things. One, it could be low quantity of vitamin C. So vitamin C in the structural bioflavonoids, especially things like rutin. And also, it could be quercetin as well. But those are particularly important for the structural integrity of the gums. It could be bad organisms, basically dysbiosis in the mouth. So organisms that are not supporting and some of the organisms that actually are disruptive. So how do you prevent it? Well, really super good diet, really clean diet, you know, avoiding your allergens, avoiding all the hydrogenateds, and plenty of vitamin C, bioflavonoids, and then good probiotic. Now, if you are concerned about the probiotics in your mouth, there are some probiotics that you can take that you can suck and put them in, or you can actually get certain, whoops, doggies barking. You can get certain, okay, I'm sorry about that. My doggie is like going crazy, growling. Must be somebody at the door delivering a package or something. All right, sorry about that. So, for restoring the probiotic structure in the mouth, there are certain probiotics that they sell that are for the mouth that you can actually suck on. They recommend doing that after brushing and just hanging on with them. If you go to livinglibations.com, Nadine Artemis has a couple of recipes on there for making like a little probiotic, she calls them lozenges type of thing. She uses coconut oil and adds the probiotics and some essential oils to it. Some of the essential oils there she's got on her site, really good for that. She's really good for that. So I would go check out Nadine Artemis's site. She's got a lot of great information. She did a vital Q&A with us or a vital health topic with us once a couple of years ago. And so that's in the library as well. So you can listen to her. Alex, LED lights in the bathroom vanity area, pros or cons? I mean, I hear kind of negative things about LED lights. I tend to like the incandescents better. We replaced all of ours. A lot of ours had fluorescents and we replaced them. So I don't have all the research at the tip of my tongue, but I would just do a Google search on it and you can find out a lot more information. Sandra, hi. Although I'm starting to feel incredibly better, my hair loss is still a big issue. Minoxidil has been helping me in the past, but I stopped a big while ago in order to detox. My question of the day, besides the elixir, which I've been taking every day, is there other topical solution that you can suggest? Thanks. Let me think about this. You know, we really want to get to the root cause. The root cause is oftentimes low thyroid function, low adrenal function. It could be liver function. Biotin, so looking at maybe some topicals that contain biotin might be helpful. Taking biotin internally can be helpful. Anything with silica in it, so horsetail could be very helpful. Horsetail is very high in silica, and you can take that as an herb. You can brew it by pouring on boiling water or letting it sit for, you know, 15 minutes or so, and then you can just add the whole thing into your peering out the window and seeing my dog doing crazy stuff out there, so I'm not sure what's going on. Looking at biotin and silicon. So there's BioSil, which is a supplement that you can take that has high in silica, And supporting the liver, yellow dock is a really important herb for supporting the liver and can have massive effects on the skin and nails and hair. So silica, biotin, and yellow dock might be some things to look at. Jay said, Ray, Dr. Longo, what were your thoughts on his diet approach? He was a little confusing to me, but maybe I'm trying to resolve what he said with your approach. Obviously, we disagree on his view of accepting glutens. What are your takeaways for folks like us in ERC? Yeah, I totally disagree with him on his gluten approach. I think that stats show that way more than one in three per people are affected by gluten intolerance. I mean, if you look at Dr. Tom O'Brien's book, you look at Terry Wall's book, all these people that are looking at it from an autoimmune standpoint, you look at healing leaky gut, you look at Dr. Fasano's work, that almost everybody has a problem with gluten tearing holes in the lining. And according to Dr. Tom, it's just a matter of time before you pass that oral tolerance and it becomes a problem. So I'm still very, very adamant about anybody with any kind of health challenge should avoid gluten. I think where he's coming from with that is trying to appeal to the masses so that it's not too difficult. I see a huge problem in that, is that what people are willing to do versus what they need to do are often very different. And yeah, I mean, I could certainly see if he had that disclaimer to say, hey, you know, you might be okay with gluten, make sure you're careful, but he doesn't really say that in the book, which is really was disconcerting to me. I still believe that anybody with any autoimmune disease, anybody with any kind of energy issues, any health problems at all, can be traced to gluten, and I say gluten is guilty until proven innocent, just based on the research that I've done. Yeah, you go off of it for 6 months, minimum, you're feeling great, your health is totally restored, then you go back and try it in a very controlled way. You might be able to do okay with it. I still don't agree with pasta being okay. Pasta is flour, it's a refined food, it's actually, it's high glycemic in spite of what he said. If I ate 50 grams of pasta a day, my blood sugar would be through the roof. So I'm a very big fan of personalizing, testing your own stuff. Yes, the common average person may not want to do that, but having gluten every day in their diet is not good for the average common person who's sick. So that's my opinion and I'm sticking with it. And then Alex, mixed reviews from studies, Ray. Wheatgrass, is wheatgrass okay to drink? Is wheatgrass okay for those who are gluten-free? You know, wheatgrass should be okay. There are agglutinogens in it that some people might be sensitive to, not everybody. I find that most people, including me, who are very sensitive to gluten, I mean, I just need a pinch of gluten in a little bit of soy sauce that was added to my salad dressing on a big salad. And I was sick for like, I was actually sick for weeks after that, but very sick for 48 hours. So I can tolerate wheatgrass. I think it's important to know the source of your wheatgrass, to know that it's 17 days seems to be the cutoff. Before that, you're going to end up with, you'll still have some gluten in there if you go too low. Cutting it above, like an inch above where the little seed is, makes a huge difference. And I've found that most people can get away with it. But again, test. Everybody's different and everybody's unique. Okay. So I'm going to go back to the conference. If you have a question, comment, need support, star 2 on your telephone keypad. Or if you're on the web call, there's usually a box that says raise hand. So I have Toronto. Is that Mary? Hi.
Oh, hi. Hi, Dr. Marie.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Good. I'm just putting you on my earphones here. Oh, okay. I thought I would be late on doing the star 2 here. I thought there would be a lineup of people already.
No, there isn't
on the
so
queue.
Far.
No, okay, great. So I have a few questions, as always.
Sure.
Okay. I'm going to start off first with vitamin C.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a question with vitamin C because I was purchasing and I went through your supplement list too and you had recommended the Health Force vitamin C, right? And so my question is kind of two parts because I remember going through some of your modules or whatever the case is, and you do the vitamin C, and a vitamin C test or something.
Right, the calibration.
A calibration, yeah. So Okay, well, I'm not doing the calibration, so to speak, but because I'm doing high dose of vitamin C IV stuff, and for the thyroid support too, I have the naturopath that's doing, we're doing a protocol with the iodine and stuff. I think I mentioned it in the last call. And with that is selenium as well as vitamin C. So I had at the time, and I think I mentioned as well, used, and I ran out of Marcus Long, whatever his thing is, his last name there, I can never pronounce it. I used his vitamin C, which I believe I mentioned that I tested well with it. Okay, so that's done with. So I thought, well, you know what? It's really expensive to get his stuff here. So let me see if I can order Health Force. And there, because I looked at your list, and I thought, okay, I wanted a food-based whatnot, and I thought, I'll use the Health Force vitamin C. So I ordered it because we can get it here. And I don't know if you noticed, and maybe you can make a comment, and maybe perhaps you didn't notice it because it's on your list of supplementation, but there is a, when I went through the ingredients, because I was comparing it with, I was doing this with my naturopath, and then my, another naturopath that I'm dealing with that does my IV, he recommended taking absorbic acid. So he gave me the thorn absorbic acid. And then I thought, okay, wait a minute. What is that? So can you please comment on the absorbic acid versus, like, I guess, whole food kind of vitamin C? But before you do that, I wanted to comment that the Truly Natural, Health Force's Truly Natural vitamin C has a non-GMO corn. And I'm staying away from all corn. I know. So here, I bought this whole bottle.
New.
I know. I must be, because I thought, I need to ask you, because I know it's on your list, and you would not have put that on your list had you known that there was corn in it.
No, so, it didn't used to have corn. They must have changed the formulation. Because it used to be just rosehips, acerola, a bunch of other things like berries, amla berries, things like that. Mm-hmm. It was all whole foods, not corn. Interesting.
Yeah, well,
they might have changed. Maybe they
changed. Yeah, and a lot of the stuff you're saying is not even on here anymore. All I see is cherries.
What is on? What does it say? Cherries. Usually you had a whole bunch of them.
100% acerola cherry, which is Malmiga, I guess the real name for it.
Yeah.
Concentrate. Maltodextrin.
What?
Maltodextrin, which is, and in brackets it says a complex carbohydrate from non-GMO corn.
Oh, that's new. I would never recommend something with maltodextrin.
It says maltodextrin as a drying medium. So they're using it as a drying medium? What do they mean? I don't know what the hell that means.
Well, it keeps it from clumping. They use that in a lot of things.
Okay. So, all right. Now I got this wonderful bottle, and now I can't even use it because now I don't want to use it.
Yeah.
So, I know, and I can't even return it because I've opened it. So much for that, because I started to kind of use it and then notice. I didn't even notice this, actually. My naturopath noticed it. She's like, why is your corn in it? So can you comment on this absorbic acid? And then can you please just recommend a really good vitamin C? I see the one that is on your list, but you have a few of them. And I don't even know if I can use them.
Okay, so ascorbic acid is actually the it's a vitamin C, like the purified. It's the extracted. It's usually synthetic, it's extracted. If it's really just extracted from whole foods, it's going to be super expensive. So it's a synthetic version. It can be very helpful. I usually don't like to use straight ascorbic acid. I like to use buffered ascorbic acid. So if you look at something like Perk, which is the one I will use when I'm trying to fight something off because it's very concentrated. The whole foods versions, they're not high enough. Now, you're doing IV, so it's not as critical for you to get so much extra vitamin C. But I like doing the Perk buffered C to bowel tolerance, right? So, I don't know that applies when you're doing IVs, but it could, but getting your body saturated. The other part that I really like is liposomal. Liposomal gets right in. It gets absorbed much better. Problem with liposomal is it's super expensive. It's usually like $1 a gram, which probably compares about what the Whole Foods ones are. If you add it up, it's like probably $1 a gram of vitamin C if you really add it up. Because those are really low. Like a dose of, you know, a teaspoon of that stuff is usually like 250 milligrams. So how do you get a good vitamin C? Well, my top priority would be the liposomal, just because it has similar effects as IV.
Oh, okay.
And that's what I try to do. I just ran out of it, so I went back. And I kind of test my body. I do that kind of sway test on my body. And I had liposomal and PERC. And it's interesting because my body will go back and forth. Like one day it might want the liposomal, one day it might want the PERC, and another day it might want both. So it's kind of interesting. Another day it might want neither. So I kind of judge from what my body is looking for. But whenever I'm wanting really high doses, I'll usually use the PERC because I can get that easily.
Right. I think trying to remember at least 1,000 milligrams. That was what they want me on or something like that.
Yeah, 1,000 milligrams is easy to get. With the PERC, it's probably a third of a teaspoon.
Right. Oh, okay. So either way.
Yeah. Yeah. With the same thing with the liposomal, if that's all you're trying to take, the liposomal is a really good option because it's about $1 a gram, so that's 1,000. Mm-hmm. So it'll cost you $30 for a 30-day supply, but it's very highly absorbed. So that's
right.
Did I? Yeah. Yeah, so it's very highly absorbable, so it does become cost-effective. It's more cost-effective than the IV.
Of course, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, IVs are like super expensive. So when you compare it, but like people just can knock out serious stuff in 24 hours with high dose of liposomal. I mean, super serious, like infections and stuff. So that's my opinion. I'm not a big fan of the non-buffered form because it's tough on the teeth.
Right.
You're taking it as a powder and it's just not as balanced. So that's
the absorbic acid you're referring to, right? Yeah. Because that bottle, I didn't open it. I took it home because sometimes I get stuck with the, okay, I need it. And I feel bad at that moment to say, okay, you know what, let me just think about it, you know, while I'm sort of in the office, right? But I didn't open it because I thought I had to go back to your notes and kind of check and see, right? And then I've had it now for 2 weeks, so I'm going to return it. Because I wanted to bring this to the call. So the one that you're looking at is the Seeking Health Optimal Liposomal Vitamin C.
One, Live On Labs has one that's available on Amazon. I just don't know what's available in Canada. So
I know. That's the problem, right?
That's the problem. But I'm sure you can find something that's liposomal. I mean, in Canada, I'm bound to find something. And they're mostly good. I like the ones from Seeking Health. They use a phosphatidyl serine or choline, one of the phospholipids as a carrier. Some of the others have, you know, cheaper carriers. But I like the Seeking Health, but I think Live On Labs is pretty good as well. Some of them use soybean oil in them. I'm like, I don't think I like soybean oil as much as I like phosphatidyl. Yeah. And they have to have some phospholipids to get them in there. But it's basically it's creating them in tiny little particles that get absorbed right into your intestine without having to go through the full digestion to get in there. They get right absorbed through what's called the chylomicrons.
Right. So do you recommend then getting the liposomal and the PERC, or just the liposomal is fine enough for now? Because I'm doing the IV anyways.
You're doing the IV, so you're probably okay with just liposomal.
Okay.
Like I said, I personally do both. I just ran out of my liposomal, so I'm going to order more, and I still have some of the PERC, but yeah.
And you just alternate them.
Yeah, I go with what my body is asking for. I usually just test to see what it's asking for.
Oh, you know, so you're testing it with your...
I do the pendulum type thing, yeah.
Uh-oh,
no, I
like
do
that.
You know, the woo-woo stuff, right? Muscle testing.
Okay. It's not woo to me. It might be woo to other people, but I get it. Yeah,
right.
Okay.
Yeah. I find it very helpful in my body. Like, I'm surprised sometimes. Like, what? It doesn't want this? I'm like, nope, it doesn't want this. Okay. So I trust it.
Yeah.
You know, when I get results that I'm expecting all the time, I think maybe I'm influencing it somehow. But when I get those, like, huh, that's a weird result. Why would I not need that today? Why would I need that today? Then I go, okay, there must be some validation to it. And a lot of times it's I'm intuitively feeling it. Like, I don't even have to, you know, I just know by picking it up that, you know, this isn't going to be good for me.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that's all about intuition. And once you're clean eating and all that stuff going on, I mean, that just comes a little bit more natural, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You can trust those things.
Trust
you know you're not getting the urge for Oreos and going, well, I guess I must need Oreos, right? No, I don't think so. Right? But I have this urge for kale today. Oh, okay. Right. Well, maybe your body really needs kale today.
Exactly. Well, and as it gets cleaner and cleaner, you have more urges for that than you do for the Oreo cookies.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I haven't had an urge for an Oreo in it forever. But, you know, sometimes I have an urge for chocolate. And then I go, you know what? I bet I really need some magnesium right now. And sure enough, I'll test magnesium and I'm low, which is surprising because I eat so much green stuff. But, you know, we have such a polluted world and there's so much stress that we can't always trust that we're getting everything we need. Or you're eating fast and under stress and not really absorbing everything the way you should. So I kind of just tune in and trust it. And magnesium is easy for me to tell because I'll suddenly start waking up in the middle of the night with leg cramps. I'm like, what? How can I be low in magnesium? That's crazy. Right. But then I go ahead and supplement magnesium for a couple of days and the leg cramps go away. I haven't had a leg cramp in a couple of weeks because I've been really consistent with magnesium. So I think we just have to trust our bodies.
Yeah.
Clean them out enough to be able to trust them. But I just did a 9-day, 8-day water fast. So I know I'm pretty clean that I can trust myself, right?
Right. Yes. Okay. I got to put that one down. I needed to go back to your water fast question that I had for you later.
Okay.
Good. All right. So oils. I know that you don't do very much oils, and I've been really cutting back on my oils. I mean, I don't. You know what? I do all, like, I try to buy a really good, you know, it's, there's this really amazing olive oil, which is cold press, raw, blah, 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 the whole thing. So when I'm feeling that I go out for dinner somewhere, let's just say, and just have a plain salad, the quickest thing for me to take is my olive oil, and that's it. So I take my olive oil.
Oh, you take
my
it Celtic, with you.
Yeah.
And then
I
you
do,
don't and the commercial stuff that they're going to serve.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I take, and I sprinkle my Himalayan sea salt on, and that's, I'm good with that. I don't really need anything else. Now, what I have been sprinkling and experimenting with, which I've thoroughly enjoyed, is, nutritional yeast.
Yeah.
Now, nutritional yeast is, I don't believe is raw. I don't know if it's dried or what the story is with that. But I'm wondering for my current health condition, not speaking of the thyroid, do I need to stay away from nutritional yeast? I just...
You know, it's a good question.
I'm like,
now, here's the thing. It's not raw. But I don't think it's raw. But... you know, it depends on the quality, right? I trust a few companies. Premier Research is one of them. I know that they do it really high quality. It's loaded with B vitamins.
Yeah.
And it tastes pretty good. I don't eat it all the time, but I do use it. It gives things a nice little flavor. I don't see any studies or anything that talks about it being a downside for your condition. So I'm not convinced that there's a problem with it. I mean, especially if you're not doing it like, you know, 4 cups a day of it, right? Or you're just doing it a sprinkle here and a sprinkle there.
Well, a sprinkle here. It might be in my, like, you know, cheeses that I'm making, my raw cheeses that I'm making or whatever. They can.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, dressing. I put it in a salad dressing or whatever here and there. And I would just sprinkle it. I would sprinkle it daily if I'm having a salad. Like, I was doing it on my salad, like, all through the whole winter season, right? So it was, you know. And, you know what? I could – I love the taste of it in my salad.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I could go cuckoo if I'm not careful, right? But,
yeah,
you know. So I thought, do I have to eliminate one more thing? Because that was the other thing. Now, given that situation, am I best to eliminate all oils? There's Dr. McDougall, whatever his case is, and he's big on no oils at all. And I know that you're big on the no oil thing, but some of your recipes have like a little bit of olive oil, have a little bit of flaxseed oil, some other oils. You know what
I
mean?
It just depends on the situation, right? I think that as long as you don't overdo it. I mean, I'm not a big fan of oil. I try to use whole food fats. So in salad dressings, you know, I'll probably put like a little bit of avocado or coconut or nuts or seeds soaked, blended up to get the fat. So I think it's best to avoid anything out because you don't know the quality of their oil, right? I mean, where you can control the quality, you're keeping it cold and you're only using a little bit here and there. But there are people, you know, McDougall will say that, but also Hippocrates, right? Clement will say no oil.
Oh, really?
Right? Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I didn't know about that. No, the recipe book has quite a bit of oil. Like their house-made dressing is olive oil based.
Oh, really?
Now,
I didn't know that.
Unless he's changed his tune since I've been there, I don't know.
No, I just thought from the beginning that was what his feeling was. But I think it's everything.
Yeah, that I remember.
Quantity-wise, right? You do not want oxidized oils in your body. You do not want oils that have been preserved or spoiled in any way, right? Heated in any way,
exactly.
Because the heat is really what destroys the oil. Olive oil is less prone to that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're safest if you're going to be doing a little bit of oil that is coconut or olive.
Mm-hmm.
But I would really go careful on the amount. I wouldn't do more than, you know, on average a teaspoon a day, right? So if over the course of a week you're doing like, you know, a couple of tablespoons because you went out, then great.
Exactly.
When you're home, don't make your dressings with oil. Make them with whole foods.
Yeah, no, it's more for travel purposes. When I'm at home and I can have it fresh. See, the thing is, I really love avocado dressings, but they spoil so quickly. I can't get them through the week, you know, and I make a batch and then I have to throw it out and I feel bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, and
lemon in them. Try more lemon.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point, too. You know, and I've been experimenting with various other different ingredients. I've just made a hemp dressing that has no oil in it, and I just fluked. I was putting a couple things together in my mind. I saw something, and I made a variation of it, and it tasted delicious, and I've been having it all week, you know.
Nice.
So it's possible.
And hemp's
course,
great because
you know?
You've got your omega-3s, you've got some protein in there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very exciting. So, do I have time for a few more? I've always had a list of questions.
I don't
questions
see any other
you,
questions,
you know?
So go for it. Until anybody else has questions, raise your hand, star two. Otherwise, I'll keep going with Mary's.
On the topic of coconut, of oil, just coconut oil, I'm not quite sure where I got the, well, actually, it was Brian who I think he said, maybe it was him, I'm not sure. And somebody else, I think I read it somewhere, was coconut oil now not being a good oil for cooking. I mean, I'm not cooking at all anything right now. Everything is raw right now. But, you know, on a rare occasion, let's say, you know, when things are going to be getting better, I would maybe toss some little bit of warm, you know, olive oil to maybe, you know, throw in with some veggies or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is this something new? Have you heard of that? Did you hear anything?
Okay, repeat that because you got me a little confused.
Oh, coconut oil apparently is supposed to be, you know, it's always been said that coconut oil is one of the best things to
use. Has a higher heat point.
A higher heat
point. Because it's saturated.
Point, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So now they're saying it's not a good idea to actually cook at all with coconut oil and not to use it.
I didn't hear that.
I
hadn't seen that. But I mean, I'm not a big fan of cooking with any oils, but coconut tends to be the safest just because it's mostly saturated. Olive is a little bit safer going to higher heats because of it being unsaturated. It still has some unsaturated. So anything that has unsaturated fats in it is going to be problematic because unsaturated fats above 118, you kill them and you create oxidative byproducts. So I would be careful about that. But I haven't heard that it's not good at all. But, you know, in your situation, I probably would avoid it. I would avoid any heating oils.
Yeah. And I'm not even remotely even going there with that one either, so for sure. But I was just actually curious, enough for me, just even for when – you know, if I'm making something for Vince, for instance, I might use coconut oil as opposed to, you know, olive oil or something else.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So for maybe for him or when I have guests over and, you know, we're making things, like I have a cousin of mine and we do things together a lot. She loves to use coconut oil and she tends to cook with it as well. So I'm thinking, what? Like, is this something that, now we need to be aware of kind of thing?
Yeah, because, I mean, it's not something I'd really heard of. I think that with stir fries, like a light stir fry, what I tend to like to do if I want that flavor, I will stir fry things in a little bit of broth or water.
Mm-hmm.
And then right at the end, I'll just throw the oil in at the last few seconds and just, you know, get it warmed up and then take it off.
That's a good idea. Yeah. Or you just don't get it to the, you don't get it to the point where it's like really, really, really,
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to melt it depending on, if you're
making
it.
Well, if it's cold outside, you got to, I will melt it in the dehydrator.
Ah.
So I can just pop it in the dehydrator. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you're kidding.
As long as it goes above like 90. So I'll put it in the dehydrator at 120, you know, whatever, low temperature, and just leave it there 15 minutes is all it takes. I do that with cacao butter, too. If I'm making like a chocolate, I'll put the cacao butter in there, and I'll melt it in the dehydrator. Yeah. So then you don't risk the temps going too high.
Oh, that's fantastic. I didn't really think of that, you know, because sometimes, like, when I was making, like, raw chocolate or whatever, I, you know, you have to melt these things, and I'm thinking, okay, and I'm melting it over top of the stove, and I'm like, okay, is it defeating the purpose? So I will melt it all the way through.
Yeah, no, just do it in the dehydrator. And then that way you can just stick it in there while you're preparing all your other ingredients. Usually 10, 15 minutes, it's done.
True.
And you can even go to 140 on it, because it doesn't actually heat it to 140 unless you leave it at 140 for an hour or two. So for 15 minutes at 140, it's not going to cook it, not at all.
Oh, okay, perfect. Oh, well, that's good. I never thought of it.
Yeah.
Okay, next question really quickly. Okay, cashews, as much as I love them, and you have amazing recipes with cashews. But what's with this mold in cashews I'm hearing now?
Yeah, I mean, that's been talked about a long time. But it's really curious because Gabriel Cousins, in his book, I think it was Rainbow Green, talked a lot about cashews, stay away from cashews. And then all of a sudden, after a few years, he started to incorporate cashews into his recipes. So I don't know if he determined that they weren't, but it does tend to have more fungus, fungal growth than would other nuts. So if, instead of cashews, I like macadamia nuts. You know, they give it that same white creaminess.
They're hard to get. They are. I actually finally ordered them. I've ordered some from a company that can get macadamias from Sun Food. And, oh, my God, they were the best macadamia nuts I have ever eaten.
Yeah.
There is a store in Toronto that we do have, a health food store that sells them. They're expensive, like a small little handful is like $10. But they do not look – they look yellow. They're yellow to me. They don't look like – they don't look appetizing whatsoever.
Yeah.
So I've had to order from Sun Food, which is fine. They're expensive, and I like them. But they have a small little bag, so it's like an 8-ounce bag, you know. So
we order them directly from the grower, and I don't know if they'll ship to Canada, but they ship to us. It's actually called Max Nuts.
Max Nuts? M-A-C-S or apostrophe S?
And guess what? We get them for like $10 or $12 a pound. And they are so fresh. They basically pick them, and then they low temperature because they have to dehydrate them. They can't send them fresh. But we have made a specification that we want them done. If you just tell them you want it done the way Dr. Rita Marie does them, they'll do it at low temperature. They won't do a high temperature. And they, we order them. I usually order them by 5-pound bags. And we get them for like, you know, $10, $12 a pound, depending on the season. It's really, really good. So if they'll do it for you, I don't know if they ship to Canada, but they do ship to the U.S. from Hawaii, so they may be able to ship to Canada.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's good to hear. Yeah. Because I do. I love macadamia nuts. Oh, my goodness. So good. Okay.
We just posted a link to a place in Canada, livelong.ca, product lipospheric vitamin C. The lipospheric is similar. It's probably Live On Labs.
Okay.
But yeah, she posted a link in the chat, so you may want to look at that.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And it's like
thank
$42
you.
Canadian, $34 US.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Okay. Yeah, I'm excellent. Looking to see if there's anybody else posting here. Let's see. Give me a second. Laura, do we have an ERC call coming up soon? Just wondering if it's a good time to. Yeah, so we have an ERC call probably next week or the week after, Laura, and we can look at your thyroid then, because we have the ability to share screen on those calls. We don't have the ability to do that here. If the LED light is yellow, is that considered safe? Alex, I just wish I knew. Maybe Lynn can find that out, but I think I don't know enough about the difference in between the LED lights versus, right, you know, incandescents and whatnot. And Lynn just posted the link to MacNuts, so you can go look that one up.
I was just only looking it up.
To
I
was
going to answer.
Well, you have that place, right? Don't you have a post office box you can ship them to?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, you can get them shipped there.
Perfect.
You know, in order order enough, what we do is we'll order 5 pounds. And we stick them in our freezer.
Stick
them in the freezer. Yeah.
Okay. Perfect.
Right. Yeah.
Great. Thanks for the link there. Yeah, for sure. Because I don't. I didn't go to it.
Okay. Yeah. Go through there. All right. So I have a few more hands up. So why don't we come back to you if we still have questions, and we'll handle everybody else's questions.
Yeah. Okay. Just a couple more. Sounds good.
Sure. Great. Thank you. All right. So I will turn that one off. It looks like in the Q&A we have, what do you suggest for dandruff? I mean, again, like everything else, it's what's the root cause? Like, is it that your scalp is dry because you don't have enough, you know, the right oils and fats in your diet? And I, when I say oils, I mean whole food fats. But, you know, if you have a deficiency, is it sometimes dandruff is actually a B6 deficiency? It's like seborrheic dermatitis, seborrheic dandruff. And that can be related. It can be related to essential fatty acid deficiencies like omega-3s and 6s. And it can be related to, like I said, B6 deficiency is often attributed as well. All right. So who else? We have Cece. Hi, Cece.
Hi, Dr. Rita Marie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
Good.
Okay. So I've got a couple of questions. Okay, the first one is, you know, the healthier I eat, the more weight I lose, and I'm actually at my high school weight, which is a very lovely weight, but I don't want to go lower than that.
Lower,
so
yeah.
I'm trying to think of things to, you know, compensate. So I was thinking someone suggested a protein powder to add that to my diet. So I was going to ask you, I hear it's good to, change them up a bit. So I was thinking maybe I should get 3 different kinds. And I was wondering, first of all, do you think it's a good idea? And which kinds should I get?
Okay. So that comes to mind. But the other thing that comes to mind is, are you getting enough fat in your diet? So because fat usually will provide extra calories without as much density and not fill you up as much. So what's your fat intake like?
Well, I always have some avocado every day. That's every single mm-hmm. day. I have like a half.
Okay.
And I often have like today I had sunflower seed pate. What else do I have? I feel like it's enough, but does that sound like enough?
It may not be. If you have a high metabolism, which it sounds like you have, then you may need a little more. So you can try something as simple as have a whole avocado every day. I mean,
I have trouble digesting a whole. I noticed.
Even if you have it like half in the earlier part of the day and half in the later part of the day?
That might be okay. Half and half.
Yeah.
I've noticed my body likes that, half and half.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. You could do it that way, because here's the thing I find. If I try to preserve a half an avocado for the next day, it's usually brown. So I just use that as an excuse to eat the whole avocado in one day. But, yeah, I would say split it between the two parts. Now, if you're having trouble digesting that much at the same time, there would be some fat digestion. So you might want to look at why are you having trouble with that. Is your liver a little bit sluggish? You can look at some digestive enzymes that are high in lipase. Right, that might be a good thing to look at. So there are some, I know transformational enzymes will have a variety of different enzymes, and they do have one that's lipase. There's another one called lipogold, which is higher in the fat digesting enzymes, and you may want to take that with any fatty meals you have. Because if you notice that you have that trouble, you may just naturally gravitate towards a lower fat intake. Right? And it's a matter of finding that balance, because, you know, and the other thing to do is to take what you're eating, like just write it down for a day and go to fitday.com or one of the other little online tools that will, you put all your food in and it tells you the breakdown. Do you have enough calories, right? You may not be eating enough calories and you just need to increase that.
Yeah, I'm trying. I'm trying to.
Yeah. But like something like that where you do a shake. So a protein shake could be good, because then you do the protein shake and you can add a little bit of extra fat to it. You don't want to just do the protein shake. You can add some avocado. You can add a handful of soaked sunflower seeds or walnuts or whatever. Hemp seeds, which are good because you get your omega-3s, you know, that sort of thing. And you can make this kind of enriched shake that you can have. As far as what protein powders, there's a lot of good ones. Sacha Inchi is a good one, relatively inexpensive. Sacha Inchi.
How do you spell that?
S-A-C-H-A.
Yeah.
I-N-C-H-I. It's from South America.
And
you can get
that
pure. Because you're sensitive to stuff, I'd probably recommend getting individual ones first, and then if you want to get combined ones later. But that way you can test them out. pea protein, pure pea protein. You can get that on, I know Designs for Health has one that I really enjoy. It has a really nice flavor. They put a little stevia and vanilla in it. So pea protein. There's also pumpkin seed protein, which is kind of interesting. I think it's Omega Nutrition has pumpkin seed protein.
So you're suggesting to get just plain protein without all the other added stuff that a lot of them have? That's what you're suggesting, huh?
That's what I'm suggesting just because you tend to be sensitive. You know, you can try something and then go, oh, that didn't work. Maybe it had nothing to do with the protein. It might have to do with all the extra goodies that they added.
All the extra stuff. I noticed that sometimes.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So the like Sun Warrior, which I happen to have, that has a lot of added stuff to it, right?
Well, the Sun Warrior, I mean, if it works for you, great. You know, if you've already determined that it works for you, super.
Okay.
Sun Warrior tends to, they have one that's just the pure rice, and then they have a couple of other little things added to it. And then they have one that's hemp, pea, and cranberry. And you can also get cranberry by itself. So all of these things you can get as individual proteins. Try to see if they have, like, the small serving sizes. Like, if you go to the health food store, you might find, like, the little sample sizes. Try them first so you don't invest like 40 or 50 bucks.
I'll play with
it. Okay. Yeah, play around with
good.
It. Right. And
so
come up with a nice shake,
yeah.
you know, and you can vary it from day to day. You can vary the fat that you put in it. Someday you might put coconut in it. Maybe another day you put avocado in it. Another day you put hemp seeds. So you vary it up.
Okay.
And that gives you a nice variety of nutrients, and you'll find what works and if anything doesn't. And then if you find that you need some extra support with fat digestion, then take the extra fat digesting enzymes with it to support that.
Okay. I'll do that. Thank you. I went to a health expo place, and it was wonderful, and I did a lecture on ozone therapy.
Mm.
Now, in Massachusetts, it's not allowed to be used on people. They use it on animals here, but I could cross over the state lines and do it in New Hampshire. Mm. So my question is, they're finding it very, very helpful health-wise. Have you experienced anything like that?
Well, I haven't personally done it, but I know people who have and have had good results with it. I mean, the downside of it is it's costly to do the treatments, but I know people who have done it and really helps with mold exposures and heavy metals and various things like that, even chronic like Epstein-Barr and things like that. So it could be helpful. You want to make sure you go to, you know, a reputable place, obviously.
Okay. And my last question. You had mentioned in one of your talks, chia seeds, is helpful to put into your smoothie because it slows down something, maybe the fruit and the vegetables.
Well, if you have fruit in there, it definitely will slow down the absorption of it. I actually put chia seeds in juices because I find that with green vegetable juice, it can shoot my sugar up. But if I'm careful, and I usually what I'll do if I'm traveling and I buy a container of green juice, I'll stick in some protein powder and some chia seeds to slow down the absorption.
So how much chia seeds do you put in?
Good question.
Like a tablespoon?
Probably a tablespoon or two. Just play with it. And typically, if you're going to put it in with the chia, with the juice or the smoothie, you want to either have made a gel with the chia first and just added the gel, or when you put the chia seeds into the smoothie, that you let it sit for a good at least 15 minutes to absorb the liquid, and then you add extra liquid if you need to, because otherwise it can form a brick in your gut if you don't have enough liquid.
Okay. So I'll gel it up first. That sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I listened to that talk about the fasting.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess in the United States, True North is the only one that's supervised legally.
I think there might be a couple of others, but they're medically supervised. Like they have an MD on staff. They have a chiropractor. They have a psychologist. They have an exercise physiologist. So they have very intensive staff. I'm trying to think if there's any other place. The place I went to was like really rinky-dink, and it wasn't very well supervised, but it was supervised to an extent, and it worked for me. They're gone, long gone.
So I'm not ready to go now. I'm going to do your program first and see how much my health improves. But that's mm-hmm. going to be the next thing if I don't improve enough.
Yeah, and you might consider the fasting mimicking that he was talking about. Just, you know, do one session. I want to look at it. Somebody said that it said on the package that when they looked it up that don't use if you're allergic to soy or nuts. Obviously, I know there's nuts in it, but I don't know if it may be just soy sauce. So I'm going to check into that because if it has any soy protein in it, I'll be a little concerned. I'd highly recommend it.
But, yes, yes.
But you just have to watch with things like that you don't lose more weight because you will lose some weight.
Right, right. I'm not ready yet. I want to boost up my strength and everything.
Boost it up. Build your nutrition up. Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much again.
You're so welcome. Thanks, Susie.
Bye.
Bye. Okay. I'm losing my – so crazy. I sometimes lose my little mouse goes away. It's crazy. Susan Larson, hey.
Hello. Hearing me?
I'm hearing you.
All right. Quick question. I'm looking for a B vitamin complex without B12 in it because my labs came back and I was over range on B12. I know why.
Seeking Health, it's called B minus.
B minus. That's
B minus. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's not, it doesn't have folate in it either. So it has the two of those because a lot of people have trouble with the methylation, like they over-methylate. So he did this one B-minus without. So if you wanted to add folate to it, you could get liposomal folate. Now, also be careful, though, because if your serum levels of B12 are high, it doesn't mean that your tissue stores of B12 are high. Because a lot of times I find with people who don't methylate well that it stays in the serum. It doesn't get absorbed into the tissue, and that's why the serum levels go high. Because you're not able to activate it. So okay. There are other ways to check. So when you get your labs back, and you'll learn about this in, I think, module 4 in NEPT, but you basically are looking at MCV, mean corpuscular volume. If that's a little on the high side, it could indicate that it's a B12 issue, that you're low in B12. You want to look at homocysteine. If that's high, it can suggest either B12 folate or B6 deficiency. And then there's one that's the gold standard for B12, which is methylmalonic acid. So I won't jump to the conclusion that just because you're above range, and it depends on how high it was, right? But was it above 1600? Was it above 800? Because the range that they give in the labs is quite skewed.
Yeah, the top range says 950 on my lab, and mine was 1100.
I wouldn't consider that you're excessive at that.
Oh, cool.
All right. Because ideally it should be up to up to 1600 is actually, they say the low end is actually 250, which is ridiculously low. But you also have to just watch if you have methylation issues. Have you done a 23andMe yet?
No, not yet. It's on my list.
Yeah. So once you get that back, you'll know better. About that.
Stay focused.
Yeah, I know.
I
have the feeling.
And that 23andMe is like, I know if I get that, that's going to take me on a bunny trail and take me away from my studies. So I'm trying to discipline myself to hold on that one.
Absolutely. So look at the rest of your lab. Was it a full blood test?
I don't know about full.
But look at CBC is pretty standard. They'll do a CBC. So look at the CBC. You want your MCV to be 90 or below, like somewhere between 80 and 90. If it's below 80, then it implies there's something going on with iron metabolism.
It's 94.
Yeah, so that says that you probably are low in B12. Now, it could be it could be folate, but you might not be methylating. So, yeah. Were you taking a methylated form of B12 or?
Yeah, methylcobalamin.
Methylcobalamin. Here's what I might try if I were you. Get the B- and then add in the B12 as adenosyl or hydroxy for a little bit and see if that shifts.
Say that again, adenosyl?
Adenosyl, yeah, or hydroxy.
Okay.
Yeah, but there's a disconnect there. Now, if you also check homocysteine and you find that that's high, yeah, it could be folate. You eat a lot of greens, unlikely to be folate, right?
No, you don't eat green. Yeah.
So that's more unusual in somebody who's, you know, on your kind of diet versus standard American diet. Standard American diet, yeah, they are definitely going to be folate deficient because they don't eat enough green leafy vegetables. So,
right.
Yeah, that's what I would look at.
All right. Well, that's awesome. See?
Okay.
I have a feeling I might have been missing something.
Yeah. There's just so much to it. And you'll get to that when you get to the module on lab testing. You'll learn all about that.
All righty. I'm working on it.
Great. Wonderful. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. All right, Laura.
Hello, Dr. Rita Marie.
Hello.
Hello. I will come next Tuesday to look at my thyroid test.
Great.
And before that, I thought there's some of the results that I have a different range or a different, you know, when it says UG/ml, how do you call that? It has a different
micrograms per.
But a different name. It has a different name than what you have. So is that something we can go over now, or it's better to?
I don't know
it?
What you mean.
What
so
it,
a different name.
So for instance, my T3 is 23 NG/DL.
Okay. So you got this done in Canada?
No, in US with Quest. Yeah. But this is not. Let me see. Maybe I should give you an exact example. So my TBH is
TBH,
my,
total
my,
thyroid binding.
Huh? Yes. I didn't write down the whole name, but yeah, probably that's what it means. I can look it up, but let's just say my TBH name range is MCG/ML, and yours is on the master tracker. It's U with a tail G/M.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
It's the same thing. Okay.
Yeah, UG is same as MCG micrograms.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Is it the same range? Like, was it? Are you looking at free T3 or? Total T3.
Well, this one is TBG.
Yeah, I don't know those numbers off the top of my head.
Oh, that is called thyroxine binding globulin.
Okay. Yeah, I don't have that number memorized. I have to look at it because I don't do that very often. I usually do, you know, the T3s, T4s, TSH, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the same. The range is the same or similar.
It's the same then. Yeah, if it's similar, it's the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very close. Let me see. My T4 has a different name in Quest. How do you call that name? In
T4 is triiodothyronine.
I'm sorry, the MCG/VL?
It's microgram.
I mean, how do you call that, so there are different names. NG/DL, MCG/DL. How do you call that?
MCG is a microgram. It's the measure, the unit.
Measure, unit.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so T4 is, yeah, you already asked.
Do you have total T4 or free T4? Because what I basically like to look at mostly is the ratio between T4 and T3.
Mm-hmm.
And the T3, you really need to be above 3, minimally, preferably 3.3 to 3.5. ish.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they measure it in hundreds, so you might see it as 300 to 330 or something.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
So my T3 reverse,
mm-hmm.
The CRISP range is between 8 and 25, and yours is between 90 and 350. So,
yeah, it's probably a different unit, but here's the thing with
it's the same
reverse unit. T3. Reverse T3 is not, it's not useful in and of itself. It's mm-hmm. the ratio between T3 and reverse T3. So if you go to, if you do a Google search on reverse T3 and T3 ratio, there's a little thing that you can
dues to convert them. And you want it to be at least 20 to 1, 20 times as much T3 as reverse T3. And anything below that. So it doesn't matter if you're in the range on reverse T3. What matters is if the ratio is correct. Let me see if I can find my tool and I'll put it in the, let's see, resources, thyroid. Okay, let me, I'm on a different computer, so let me see if I can find it. T3 reverse T3 ratio. And it's on the Stop the Thyroid Madness site, a really cool little, here we go. Stop the Thyroid Madness. Here's the thing. I'm going to put this link into, something driving me crazy with my my mouse thing won't work.
Lynn just posted something.
Okay.
Nahi post-thyroid. Is that the one?
Let me
how
see.
How to calculate T3.
Here, I'm putting this in. This is the one that I use. I don't know what she might have found, a different one, but I have that one. I just put mine in.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know that one. Oh, this is the one I always use.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you said the T3 should be 20 times more than the reverse T3.
And it'll tell you what to put in there. It'll tell you how to do it, and then you put the numbers in there, and it'll tell you whether mm-hmm. it asks you if it's T3 versus reverse free T3, and it'll give you the ratio.
Okay.
I need to put that into the master tracker. That would be a good number to just automatically calculate for people.
Yeah. Let me see if I think everything else is good. Yeah, these were just my questions on the units and the diversity. So I'll see you
so make sure you upload them into your master tracker, and then we'll talk next week, and we'll put it up on the screen, and I'll explain it. Okay?
It's all done.
Oh, good. Yay.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Lisa Marie. Thank you, Dr. Lisa
Marie. Oh, you're so welcome.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking to see what else somebody's posted.
May I just ask about the fat? Because I've been thinking a lot about fat lately. So what you're suggesting is basically to avoid the oils that are liquefied, and eat more nuts and seeds and avocado, like eat more food oils.
Olives instead of olive oil. And I mean, not to say that you have to be 100% avoiding it, but it really is better to have whole food fats versus the oils, because you run the risk of oxidation. And we don't want that. Oxidized fats are what damages us. So, I mean, not to say I don't ever use a little bit of olive oil or a little bit of coconut oil. I do. But it's rare. And it's usually when I'm out, you know, if I'm out and having a meal at somebody's place, then I, bend the rules. But,
And what do you think of not having oils at all? Some people I hear.
I think it's great. You know, I think it's great because they're not real whole foods, right? Just the same way that.
I guess I meant like fats, like.
Oh, I don't agree with that. People who claim that you need to be on a super low fat diet under 10%, unless there's something wrong with your liver and gallbladder, I think you run the risk of getting into fatty acid deficiencies and not having enough fats to make the cholesterol, to surround the nerve sheaths, to make your steroid hormones. And I think everybody's going to be unique as to what their amount ideal is. But I think that it's an extreme position to demify any of the particular food groups, right? Mm-hmm. Fat is bad. Carbohydrates are bad. Protein's bad. We need them all. We just need them in the correct ratio for our body, our unique body. So, I mean, the thing I did today with Dr. Longo, he was talking about 0.36 grams of protein per pound of body weight. That's a lot lower than most people are claiming. Like for you, it'd be like 40 grams of protein in a day. And so people get freaked out about not getting enough protein. Like you got to have more, and more is better, and 150 grams. And you run into a lot of problems with high protein, with nitrogenous waste, straining the kidney, but also with the extra that's not used as protein to be used and converted into glucose. Now, there are times when you need more protein, right? Kids that are growing percentage-wise need a little bit more. And if you have a broken bone or you're healing from some sort of injury, you may need more protein, right? So it's a matter of finding the right realm.
But too much of anything and too little of anything is a problem, right? Mm-hmm. It's finding the right balance for you.
Mm-hmm. And how does fruits like sugar relate to the fat? I hear that fat can stay in our body for like 12 hours, well, stay in our blood system for 12 hours. And so when we have fruits within that time, it may make the glucose higher.
Heard a lot of people talk about that. Mm-hmm. I've had people send me links to explore, and I've never found any concrete evidence of it. I don't think it's a great idea to eat fruit with fat, like all the desserts that the raw foodies do, right? Mm-hmm. The lots of dates and nuts and all that together, probably not a good idea. You know, if I'm going to make a raw foods dessert or any kind of dessert, I'm going to use a low glycemic sweetener like stevia or Lohan or something like that with the fat. Or if I'm going to have a fruit thing, I'm going to have it without the fat. There, I mean, it's I don't see concrete evidence. I'd like to see it. Mm-hmm. Right.
So the time frame is what you're saying is 12 hours. It's not so crucial.
I don't know. I've not seen any evidence to it. Now, I'm happy to look. People keep sending me articles, like I say, and none of them really says what they say. Mm-hmm. I've been doing like a little thing on it in our newsletters for NEPT over the last month or so, just like looking at some of the articles and saying, well, this article found that, sure, if you did this and that, it didn't really concretely point to mm-hmm. what we're trying to say. So mm-hmm. I don't know. It might be. I mean, it might be, but 12 hours is a long time to be separating things.
Yeah, my meals are closer, like 5 hours. But I guess this thing would be to just glucose test it.
Yeah, I would check your glucose. I've never found it to be a problem. Now, I don't do much fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't have a problem with it. But, yeah, you can test it. And it's always testing how do you feel and how does your glucose respond and how's your body respond.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, people have been trying to convince me of this for a long time. And, well, what about the fat and the fruit? Okay, send me some stuff. Show me where it says that. Right? No, it's not sugar that raises your blood glucose and causes insulin resistance. It's fat. You know, maybe hydrogenated processed fat that the standard American person eats. In some of those articles, that's actually what it was saying, that it was the processed fats that were a problem. But I haven't seen evidence that having, you know, good whole food fat and, you know, carbohydrate within 12 hours of each other had any problem with insulin resistance. And I've seen people reverse their insulin resistance, including me, by eliminating the sugars, not eliminating the fats.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we're all unique a little bit, right? So we have to just play into, you can't take what somebody says in a lab. I mean, there's guys out there that are saying, eat fruit all day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, seriously, I would eat fruit all day and I'd be flying high as a kite. You know, I did it for a while and I didn't realize it until I started testing my glucose.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I have a lot of the genetics. So what's your genetic factors that play in? So, you know, I think everything has to be modulated and moderated to be reasonable, right? And to make sense. And I think I'm just really gun shy of really drastic, like don't eat any of this and don't eat any of that and super low fat. Super low fat can be great for when somebody's in the throes of cardiovascular disease and they're trying to reverse it. But long term, it creates imbalances in sex hormones. It creates imbalances in nerve sheaths. I mean, it definitely can be problematic. It's a matter of finding the right amount and the right type. I don't think fats are bad. I think bad fats are bad.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, good question.
So I guess for me, sometimes I do mix berries with seeds or nuts. So,
so watch it.
Maybe I should alternate.
And maybe check your insulin levels, right? That would have to be done at a lab. But how is your insulin levels as a result? Because what happens is when you mix the berries and the nuts, you may not get the same rise in glucose as you would if you had the berries by themselves. But the studies show that you will see a rise in insulin. So that's something to keep in mind.
What is that called? I don't think I've ever taken. Oh, it's just called insulin?
Just insulin, yeah. And you can do fasting insulin where you go in the morning before you've eaten anything. But you can also do like a postprandial insulin, which means after a meal. So you'd have to go back to the lab after you eat, right, within 45 minutes of eating to see what happens to your insulin levels. And they found there's a study, it's all in the sweet spot. There's a whole bunch of the studies that show that the insulin index of foods is important as well. And it's usually the same as the glucose index, the glycemic index, but it's not always. There's certain foods they found, like whey protein, you know, dairy, doesn't raise the glucose, but it raises insulin. And there's a few others like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that'll be probably my next thing to understand more my insulin, because I understand now the glucose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure. Bye.
Bye.
Next we have Beatrice.
Hi. Hello,
Beatrice.
Hello. You know, I came in late today, Dr. Irene Marie, but you always have interesting things. I always learn something.
Oh, good.
I have a big question for you today. 3 days ago, I was told that I have arthritis in my neck.
Ouch. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's why I was at the doctor's, because of the ouch.
You were having pain?
Pardon me?
You were having pain in your neck and you went in to get checked?
It was to the point where I couldn't move my shoulders. Now, it's happened in the last 10 years, this happened about twice. And they would just give me muscle relaxants and I would be fine in a few hours. And this time, I said I couldn't sleep. That was the problem. When I was lying down, the pain was worse than when I was standing up. Mm. And I said, this is weird. It's never been like this. So I'm going to see the doctor because I have a meditation class to teach on Thursday and Wednesday, and I cannot not do it.
Yeah.
So he checked me out, and he said, you have arthritis.
Did he do an X-ray to determine that?
No, he said that when he touched it, and he could hear the cracking in my neck when I moved.
That is not the way you diagnose arthritis.
Well,
I'm sorry.
X-rays, good. That's why I'm calling you. I have had so many X-rays on my teeth that he said, I really don't want you to go through a lot more X-rays right now.
I would go see a physical medicine doc, a chiropractor, a physical therapist, somebody who can do a real evaluation. Most MDs have no clue how to examine structurally. And they don't. I've had friends who are MDs ask me questions like, how do you do this and what do you do for this? Because they're not trained in that. And you don't diagnose arthritis without an X-ray. You can't. It's just not likely. You could have subluxations that are causing crackling. You know, so the muscles are tight. It's pulling the bones out of alignment, or they're fixated. They're not moving. And
I talk to you. Okay.
Yeah.
So I have to go then to someone else to have it. But meanwhile, until I find someone else,
yes.
Do I have to?
Well, it's arthritis, it depends. I mean, if it's arthritis and you've got bone spurs, it's different than if you have arthritis and there's just a little bit of restriction. So it depends on how severe it is, if it is arthritis.
Oh,
in the meantime, heat helps
a
lot. Heat helps a lot. Keeping it moving. So you have to get it loosened up and moved. So, you know, getting some massage on the muscles to loosen everything up, but getting an adjustment, manipulation to get things moving again. It'd be dramatic.
Okay, so that's what I'm going to have to do.
Yeah, especially if it's an acute type thing where it just suddenly came on and you've had a few incidents in the past. Not to say there may not be arthritis. You know, at your age, there's likely to be a little bit of arthritis. That doesn't mean it's causing the pain. It just means it's an incidental finding. A lot of people will find arthritis as an incidental finding who don't have pain.
How very interesting.
Doesn't mean mobility.
Yes, I've been moving around. And because it doesn't hurt when I'm walking, well, I'm walking and moving and everything. It's just, it hurts more than anything when I'm lying down and when I make certain movements, when I twist my arms to get something on the floor or something like that. It's really
weird.
Is
it sharp pain or dull, achy pain?
Usually it's dull, achy pain until I move it a certain way, then it's a sharp pain.
Yeah. I would get it adjusted. Check it out. Go to a good chiropractor or physical medicine doc.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You know,
It just irritates me that somebody would diagnose you with arthritis without going through the proper testing channel.
Yeah, and I said, do you have to take an x-ray to look at it? He said, no, I can feel it and I can hear your bones crackling when you move.
That could be subluxation. That doesn't have to be arthritis. And especially subluxation is where there's a restriction in the movement of the bones. And, yeah, you'll hear crackling. You'll feel it. And you know, there's a specific test I would take you through. Okay, bend to this side, bend to that side, bend this way, bend that way, twist this way, that. Where is it painful? And is it painful mostly on being still, like it's just there? Is it aggravated by moving? If it's aggravated by active moving, like you turning, it's usually more in the muscle part, right? There's an active component. If it hurts to move, no matter who moves it, you know, somebody takes you and moves it and moves it, then it's likely in the joint. Now, that doesn't mean it's arthritis. It just means that there's some restriction in the joint. So it's just a lot. There's a lot more to an evaluation than feeling somebody's neck and saying they have arthritis. I mean, I don't know how big a detailed an exam they did, but a chiropractor knows how to do a really detailed exam. I mean, I've done them over the internet. I'll just say, okay, toes twist this way. Okay, you've got this, probably at this level.
Yeah. So I couldn't move my head to one, the left or to the right when I went to see the doctor. That was that painful. But now I know what I have to do. Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
I really didn't need this. You know, Dr. Rita Marie, I really did not need this. So
yeah.
I'm going to check out the
Get
way you
Get some heat it. On it. Put some heat on it and then, you know, start to move it. You'll loosen it up and be able to move it. Just keep it subtly moving. Don't do any sharp movements that are going to aggravate it. But when you say there's sharp movements that aggravate it, that doesn't sound like arthritis. Arthritis is definitely worse when you're still. It's going to be worse first thing in the morning. It's going to be better with movement, right? They're supposed
to ask
those questions. That's part of an exam.
But Dr. Rita Marie, why did it hurt so much when I was lying down? I couldn't sleep. And I was lying on my back. I had a lot of trouble moving from one side to the other one. And it was down my neck and across my shoulders.
Yeah. Yeah. Without touching you and looking at you, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
But I get somebody who can actually feel and touch and see what it really is. MDs are not trained to do that. I'm sorry. Unless they're, you know, physical medicine. They're just not trained to do that.
Be with you.
Yeah. Sorry.
As they say, the old gray mare, she ain't what she used to be.
Yeah. You're doing great. And it goes into this phase. It's like right now my neck is really stiff, but I was, you know, sitting on a plane with my head tilted and cocked and, you know, so I need to get it adjusted, right? I'm going, okay, get out there and get it adjusted.
Okay, Dr. Rita Marie, thank you.
You're welcome.
Permission I needed. Thank you very much.
Perfect. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
All right. So Laura has her hand up again. I don't know if I didn't put you down, but I'll open it up, and then we'll go back to where are we? I just didn't mean to do that. Back to Mary. I'll put your hand up too. Oops. I keep... My cursor, my mouse isn't working right now, so I'm having to use my little finger, and my finger's a little bit bigger than the spaces, so it's messing me up. Anyway, I'll open Lore, and go ahead, Lore. Did you have another
thing that I forget?
Go ahead.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I hear that MCT oil helps absorb fats coming from other fats. Yes, and I was wondering how that works, like especially bulletproof MCT oil.
It doesn't help absorb fats. It doesn't. It just doesn't. That's not what it does. MCT tends to be absorbed more easily than other fats because it's medium chain triglycerides and it doesn't require all the bile and the lipase to get absorbed. It can just get absorbed through the lining. But as far as does it help absorb other fats, no. That's not my understanding at all.
Okay. Okay. And what were the two names of the lipase enzymes that you suggested earlier?
Well, one was transformational enzymes. Just check to see with them what they have that's high in lipase. And then there's one thing called LipoGold. I don't know the brand, but just look it up. They have it on Amazon, LipoGold.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
So Catherine says, when I shrug or move my shoulders, I hear crackling. What might this be happening? I've had it for many years. Again, like I just mentioned to Beatrice, it could be subluxation. It could be some tight muscles that are pulling and tugging on your vertebrae in ways that don't really serve you. Is it painful or not painful would be my other question. Catherine says, my massage therapist thought I might have arthritis in an ankle that was puffy. It was news to me. I asked my chiropractor and she didn't agree. What's the best way to determine arthritis or prevent it? Are there foods that would be helpful? What is arthritis exactly? I have no pain or indication of arthritis. Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, there's multiple types of arthritis. So there's rheumatoid arthritis, which is actually a swollen condition. It's an autoimmune. And what causes it is what causes all autoimmune diseases, which is some sort of stress, a leaky gut. It could be heavy metals, lots of things that can contribute to it. And what I would say also is, give me a second, go back to your question. Yeah, so that's what rheumatoid is. Rheumatoid arthritis is more likely in extremities. It usually starts in the wrist. The ankle is possible. There's other kinds of arthritis. There's gouty arthritis, which is a buildup of uric acid that would cause some swelling. When you see a visible swelling, that's usually a non-inflammatory, I mean, an inflammatory arthritis, not an osteoarthritis. Osteoarthritis is a age-dependent, trauma-dependent type of arthritis. So it's a wear and tear type of situation where there's actually spurs, bone spurs that occur in the joints, and it causes a friction wear and tear. When I see an ankle that's swollen and puffy, I'm not thinking arthritis. I'm thinking some other sorts of trauma, but I would do a complete history before determining that. In terms of foods that could be helpful, yeah, any kind of anti-inflammatory foods are going to be helpful with something like an arthritis that's inflammatory, like a rheumatoid arthritis, a gouty arthritis, psoriatic arthritis. In terms of an osteoarthritis, what really helps to prevent it and heal is doing things to help keep proper movement at a particular joint space. If there's been trauma to a particular area, you're much more prone to arthritis, especially if you haven't gotten the proper physical medicine approach, adjustments, muscle work, etc. Ultrasound is very, very helpful for any kind of arthritis. I find that there's some home ultrasound units that you can buy, and I've recommended it to a lot of people, like $100, $150. It's less than the cost of a visit or two to a physical therapist or chiropractor, and then you can do it on yourself on a regular basis. There's certain spots that may be hard to do it on yourself, you know, neck and shoulders. You might have to have somebody to help you because your arm might get really tired holding it up to your neck, especially if there's some issues with your arm. What else? Heat, just in general, a hot heating pad, a hot water bottle, something that warms it up, followed by good, you know, just movement in all directions and all planes, and definitely getting adjusted would be helpful, and massage. Yeah. And if you don't have pain, generally pain is one of the indications, pain or stiffness, like you just can't move as far as you used to be able to move, that can be an indication of arthritis. Okay. Good questions. You guys have really good questions. Let me do a refresh. Does daily wearing of comfortable high heels still affect one's body? Yes, absolutely. Because, this is Catherine again, because it throws off your posture. So it puts your back at a different angle than it normally would be. So it could have long-term effects on your low back. I've never heard of comfortable high heels, but I don't wear high heels just because I find them incredibly uncomfortable. But it's also, you know, not good for your back. Catherine, when somebody has been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, do they fare better without any Alzheimer's medications? Absolutely. Get the book, The End of Alzheimer's. You'll find that all the things we've been talking about for all these years are the things that researchers who are in the labs, who are checking things out and testing things, are finding to be the ways to reverse arthritis, and then some. So I would definitely look at The End of Alzheimer's. Excellent, excellent book. Susan, any chiropractors you recommend here in Austin? Let's see. A couple of them. It depends. You're way out
way out north, south, and there's one up north. Let me think. Where is she located? I think she's at Lake Line, and it's Phyllis Books. She's excellent. There's a few others, and I just haven't been to any recently except for Phyllis. I'm trying to think who I've been to in the past. There are a couple. Phyllis may know some that are in the South Austin area. But if you were to find, just look up in something and it's in your local area, you might be able to give me names and I can recommend them or not if I've had experience one way or the other. Yeah, good questions. Okay, so I'm going to go back to the chat and then I'm going to go back and open up Mary's line again. Many individuals with autoimmune diseases such as RA have ligament laxity in the upper cervical spine. That's true. I've never owned heels either. My heels are usually these wedgy kind of things that are maybe an inch high. Apollo, thank you. Put up the other lipase. Enzymatica, that's a good one. That's a good brand. Good ultrasound home unit. I usually, Lynn, you might want to find it. Usually I end up looking it up for each individual that I'm recommending it to just because it changes so much. But usually they're on professional sites. Amazon used to have them, but I haven't seen any really high quality professional ones on there. John Bandy, yes, I've heard of John Bandy. Yeah, he is hard to get to see. Lynn Rose ordered an ultrasound. Lynn just posted one. So, yeah, there you go. Great. All right, so I'm going to go back to Mary. Lynn, if I missed any questions on the chat, just go ahead. And it looks like we have, let me do Kim and then Mary and then Morgan. So, hey, Kim.
Oh, hi, Dr. Can you hear me?
I can, yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, okay. How are you doing?
My
20-year-old son has gotten himself into quite a pickle, and it's been going on for years. And I'm just trying to help him out, although it's hard because of the age he is. But, you know, he's had anxiety since high school and sleep issues, and he self-medicates with things. Such as, you know, Benadryl, which is terrible. And I think he's getting off that, but also vaping, you know, the nicotine and video games. And I did test his genetics and he does have that COMT1 whatever you were talking about.
Yeah.
COMT, whatever. And his diet, you know, it's okay when he eats at home, but then he eats out, you know, with his friends. The one positive thing is he's so lazy that, you know, he's intermittent fasting, I guess. That's a good thing. But I don't, you know, I can't change his diet right now. I can work on it. But what else can I do to help him get over some of this stuff?
The anxiety.
Yeah.
So sleep is difficult.
Yeah, it's terrible, I guess.
Well, you know, I hate to say this, but the better than safer than Benadryl, but illegal is
CBD.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm not recommending that, but I mean, for most guys, that's what I thought you were going to say. At 20, I thought, oh yeah, he's self-medicating that way.
CBD oil,
you can actually get CBD oil that's really potent, that helps with sleep tremendously. There's other things like kava. What else could you melatonin certainly to help with the sleep. That's not going to help necessarily with the anxiety, but kava is very good for anxiety because it helps to calm things down.
Which brand of kava and how much?
Well, I've used two different ones. There's Gaia has a professional. I'm echoing, so I don't know if I can turn off your computer thing.
Oh, I don't know. Let me see. I'm sorry. I don't know what to do.
Are you on the phone or are you on the computer?
On the computer.
Okay. So probably if you had a headset on, it would not. I wouldn't hear myself echo. So I'll just talk softly.
I'll try putting that back in. I think, you know, if this one had a, I don't think it had, I think you stole it, to be honest. Sorry. So I don't
know. But he lives at home, it sounds like.
Yeah.
I have some semblance of control. My 19-year-old is not living at home, so I can't control it at all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I make good meals for him for dinner.
Yeah.
All organic, good quality.
That's good. Well, that helps a lot. Even if he's just having one good meal a day, that's a dramatic improvement over most 20-year-olds. So that's great. Congratulations on that. But kava, I use Gaia Professional Solutions. They have a good kava. I've used tinctures. I know, or I love Herbalist and Alchemist and Herb Farm and Gaia for their tinctures. It might be easier to get him to take a tincture because he could just carry it around with him and pop it when he needs to. You know, doing things like HeartMath. HeartMath has a really good book on overcoming anxiety.
Okay.
Which, you know, you might want to read it and just give him some techniques. If he's open to it, he may not be at 20. I think the starting point might be getting him on some of those herbs and just see what works. If you're having trouble with sleeping, I would take some melatonin or 5-HTP. We have a questionnaire. There's a really good book called The Edge Effect.
Yes.
And it has a bunch of questionnaires in there. So you can actually determine from the questionnaires, if you can get them to do it with you, is which of the neurotransmitters might be the underlying cause.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I had my son do it, and he's had some anxiety issues. And it was really clear he was a GABA guy, which kava would work for, GABA or any of the precursors to GABA, versus, you know, serotonin or dopamine, which showed up really low. With anxiety, usually either GABA or serotonin or the combination.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's playing tons and tons of video games. And, you know, I know it's, I think it's a dopamine thing for him or serotonin. GABA would, I'm not sure. But, and he did do CBD oil a little bit. I think it might have had THC in it when he was in Ireland.
Yeah.
Said that did help him some, and I've bought some myself for him, and I don't know if you know, he was telling me the truth or if he just has forgotten to take it or what, but do you suggest, I know it's not legal, but like if he could get a prescription with the THC versus without?
Yeah, and there's a THC one. Janine, if she's on, can give us some information about where she's gotten it. But there is a legal version that you can get that has THC one, I think it is, which might be helpful.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think, what state do you live in?
Connecticut.
So is there medical marijuana there?
No, I don't. It's not legal, but I think you might be able to do it with a prescription or something.
Well, if it is, then it's medical marijuana. So if you get a prescription, then, you know, many states have it. A lot of them do. Texas doesn't do that. But I know several of the Cleveland states do have it. You go to an MD, you tell them what's going on, and they have the ability to prescribe.
Yeah, and I'm just wondering if very many MDs know about it, you know how to prescribe it and everything.
Not a lot, but if you go to somebody who's more functionally oriented, they certainly do. I remember hearing a guy talk. He was an MD, but I think he was in Massachusetts. He was from New England, and he had this really great talk at one of my conferences about the benefits, although he's really careful in you know, not prescribing it to teenagers because he doesn't think that the benefits outweigh the risk in that time. You know, once they hit 20, 21, they're much more capable. And if it really is going to keep them off of things like Benadryl and other things. But the thing is, if he's doing a lot of video games, then that's overstimulating his brain, and that's going to create that hyperactivity in the brain.
Yeah. Well, he is willing to go to a doctor, but I'm having a really hard time finding a functional medicine doctor who comes highly recommended in our area. He did say he'd be willing to do one virtually. If you know of anybody who would do that who's really good.
Okay, let me think about it. In order to be able to get a prescription, you'd need somebody who's in the same state, though.
Well, you know, my brother is an internist. I mean, I could probably work around it if possible. I think I could maybe make something work if that's, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Is Janine on the call? Let me see if Janine's on the call, because she had some, no, I don't see her. She had some good experience with it for her own sleep issues. But she had something with, it was a CBD with THC-1.
Okay.
It was THC-1, you know, and it wasn't over the counter that she was doing. And she said it worked really well.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Why is it so hard to get a recommendation for a good functional medicine doctor? Is it just that there aren't that many out there? Or I mean,
there aren't. Did you go to IFM site?
Yeah.
Did you go to functional medicine and look it up for your area?
Yeah, I've done that for my mom out in Washington State. And I called this one doctor, and they didn't return the calls. You know, I don't know. I just thought.
Well, I'll post it on one of my sites where I'm on with other functional medicine docs and see if there's somebody in Connecticut that would be a good referral.
Oh, thanks. That would be great.
Yeah. There are definitely, they're out there. They're just, you know what I think part of it is? They get a lot of flack from the medical board. So they almost like they're trying to be under the radar and just work on referrals, because it can be really dangerous to do functional medicine as a licensed MD because the board will come down.
Okay.
You're okay to point people with drugs, but as soon as you start to talk nutrition,
you're
considered a quack.
Yeah, I know. So it's hard for us consumers, you know, to get there, to find the really good person for, you know, because my son's not, I've taken him to naturopaths and things just haven't worked. So I keep losing credibility with each person.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to find someone who's done it and says, oh, I can fix, I can really help because I've done it already.
I've worked with it. I don't know if you go to New York, but there's, what's her name? She wrote the book. Let me think of her name. Lynn, you know who I'm talking about. She wrote the book on, well, she really got flack from the drug company. She's a psychiatrist. She's in New York.
Kelly
Brogan. Yeah. You might look to see if she, go to her site to see if she has any references.
Okay.
Referrals, because she's close, right? She may know people across the border. New York, New York and Connecticut are right next to each other. So,
yeah.
But she's probably hooked up.
Okay.
That area. I'm just trying to think if there's any I know, but most, I know people in New York, I know people in Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire, but I don't know of anybody in Connecticut that it comes up to me. Yeah, but she's not an MD. You know, I'm thinking of somebody who's more of a PhD, but not an MD, which wouldn't really help. That's not a specialty either.
Yeah.
But she may know. I'll post it on the site to see if anybody has any recommendations in Connecticut. What town in Connecticut are you in? Or Connecticut's small enough, it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, I mean, we live near Stamford, Norwalk.
Okay.
They should be. I mean, someone could make a killing here because what my son has, so many people have it. So many kids in this area have it.
Right.
There's a real opportunity. Right. I don't know.
Yeah. And part of it is, like, kids that age, they're, you know, he's willing to eat the organic grape meals that you make.
Yeah.
But he, you know, the stuff he's doing outside of home, maybe that's not.
Yeah. Well, sure it is, you know. I mean, he's just, you know, Buffalo Wild Wings, that kind of stuff. It's awful. But I know.
Yeah. I know. And I'll find out with my own kids. One of my kids left home. He's been pure and great ever since. He's never touched anything outside of our, you know, kind of normal diet, 23. The other one's 19, and when I see what he eats, it's sad. It really, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he'll turn around, though. I think they all will. I think they all eventually get smart enough and do it. But, you know, I think he's just, my son's not progressing as much, you know, and I'm just trying to help him. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I hear you. I'll see what I can do, what I can come up with. But check to Kelly Brogan. She has a website. Check her site and see if she has any recommendations. Check IFM, which you said you did check. But check A4M and the Holistic Medical Association.
Well, one other thing. Have you ever heard of, he's a PhD, Dr. William Walsh. He's in, like, Naperville, Illinois. And he was interviewed by Mercola. And apparently he's treating a lot of mental illnesses with nutrition and having some success. So I don't know if you
Mm-hmm. Orthomolecular. If you look up the Orthomolecular Society, those are docs that come from a psychiatric standpoint that are using more of a nutritional approach. Now you got to be careful because a lot of these people are like loading them up with all kinds of supplements, wanting to do hundreds and hundreds of dollars or thousands of dollars worth of testing to see. But I mean, some of the things I mentioned, you can have them try, and we'll see if we can find them somebody.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. And Lynn, can you make a note of that and send me a Skype to remind me to do this after the call? All right. Thanks, Kim.
Thank you so much.
Okay. All right. So we have Mary. Hey, Mary.
Hi there. Hi there.
Hey.
Hey. Okay. I have a couple of few more questions. Okay. So this is a really quick one. I'm loving quite a few of the recipes that you've in all the wonderful books that you have. I've been experimenting and having a delicious time doing so. Tomatillos? Is there a substitute? I know, well, yeah, you have them in a lot of recipes, but they're not easy to get here. And I haven't really seen, I've only seen them, I saw them actually literally last week, and I don't remember why. I think I was just in a rush and I just forgot about them on my way out. But they're very not easy. I guess the places that I shop, I suppose in the health food store, they don't have them. So what is the replacement? Because all it is a green tomato. It looks like a little
green
cherry tomato.
But it has a little bit of more citrusy flavor. So I think if you just substituted tomato and then maybe added a little lemon or lime juice might give you similar. Yeah. I mean, there's tortilla salsa versus tomato salsa, and they're similar. It just has a slightly different, more, you know, more of a, like a citrusy flavor to it.
I think that you add them, if I'm not mistaken, you add them a lot in your, like, savory smoothies or something like that.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's my husband uses them in his. He makes the best smoothies, and he puts tomatillas and tomatoes and everything.
Really?
Celery. He makes amazing smoothies.
Oh, okay. Okay. Cool. All right. So that's an easy question to get out of the way really quickly. All right. So this is kind of a really bizarre question. It might be a silly question, but I'm going to ask it anyways. Okay. So it's about the whole spacing of the meals thing, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. So I'm presuming this is like a silly question. When you're saying, okay, eat, try to push five to 6 hours or whatever the case is, right? The start of that 5 to 6 hours is after you finish that meal. So let's say you finish breakfast at, say, I don't know, 10 at noon, let's just say, then you're not eating again until 5.
Yeah. So here's the thing, Mary. For most people, they eat so fast, it doesn't matter beginning or end, right? It's within a half an hour anyway. So I think it's close enough, right? So if you say you started breakfast at 9 and you finished at 10.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so whether you space 5 or 6 hours from 9 or 10, I don't think it makes that much of a difference. I prefer to see 5 hours from when you finish,
right?
But most people, you know, there's not that much of a gap between start and finish, so it doesn't matter much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like grasping at straws. Don't try to
right.
Yeah.
Well, the reason why I'm asking is because of this. So, you know, these days my meal usually takes at least an hour or so to finish.
Oh.
So if I had, if I'm having, say, because what I've been doing is, I'll juice, let's say, like a whole 20 ounce, let's say, of celery juice. Then I'll wait like 15 minutes. So, because they say, you know what I mean? And,
right.
Or even if it's a green juice, or I've been doing 10 ounces of wheatgrass a day, right?
Yeah.
So I'll wait to have whatever next. And then, you know, I'll do something else, and then I'll wait another 5 or 10 minutes to eat whatever. So I feel like I'm eating like all day. So I'm like, by the time I got to eat my second meal down, I mean, I'm only really eating two meals anyways, because I'm not really hungry. I'm fasting usually till, you know, noon, and because I work out in the morning, I'm trying to hit those post-2-hour growth hormone after workout, like doing all that sort of stuff as well.
Right.
That, and frankly, like, I mean, I'm not always that hungry that, you know, and I don't want to eat, and then I'm trying to eat within the time frame because I don't want to eat late either.
Right.
And my smoothie and my, you know, my quart of juice usually takes me forever to drink it. It's
right.
Not like, you know, so. Yeah, so I feel like sometimes by the time I have my celery juice or whatever, or my green juice, and then by the time I eat whatever it is I want to eat, and I'm trying to eat slow because I can really, you know, chow it down. So I'm trying to be more conscious now that I'm at home, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
but it's taking me forever to eat.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So I would say if you're doing two meals a day, then finish the one and then 4 hours later have the next. I think as long as it's 4 hours,
it's
going
to
be plenty. You know, five or six is stretching it for a lot of folks, right? So go for four.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, go for four.
Well, what you're saying, because I can stretch it to four. Like, that's the other thing. Sometimes I'm not hungry to eat in, like, 4 hours or whatever. Because I've stretched the meal, it's taking me so long or whatever, or I've got a lot of fats in that meal that I'm not really hungry the next meal.
Yeah.
Right? So, or I get interrupted and I can't finish my meal, so I'm still eating.
Yeah.
To finish my, you know what I mean? Yeah. You know what I mean. You know, so then I get closer to 6 or 7, but I don't want to eat at 7 o'clock, but then that's when I'm kind of hungry because I've had a late lunch or, you know, I haven't eaten until 12 and I haven't finished my meal till like 1:30. And then by 5 or 6, I may still not be hungry. Now, this is not all the time, but, you know, or if I had a really big lunch, then I don't really feel like eating anything at night anyways. You know what I mean?
Yeah, what time do you usually go to bed?
These days, I've been going to bed, say, between at 11-ish, 11, 11:30.
So as long as you finish your meal, as long as you finish your meal. If you're trying to go for 10, then as long as you finish your meal by 7, you'll be good.
Right?
So think about it at 6. Set an alarm even to go, okay, am I hungry? Am I going to need food? Yeah, okay, let me have something light now and, you know, whatever you can do. But just make make a point of finishing by 7 or 8 if you're going to go to bed by 11, as long as you've got 3 hours between the end of the meal and bedtime. Yeah.
Right.
I know the timing can be tricky, but, you know, you don't have to be perfect. You do what works best for you. I mean, the biggest thing is not eating too close to bedtime.
Right, exactly. And I can't even do that anymore because it doesn't make me feel good and I feel rotten in the morning anyhow. But with even just incorporating intermittent fasting during the morning and now because I've done it for so long, I'm not even hungry when I get up in the morning anyways to really have breakfast. I don't really want to.
Right.
You know, that gives me a shorter window to put all these food, like my nutritional calorie content in there. And I'm not, you know, I'm not hungry enough sometimes to have it all. So my concern is like, okay, am I, you know, when we went over quickly with Lisa there, you know, she was thinking, oh, there's a little bit of nutritional lack, right? We have to work
not
on
enough
calories.
Nutrition.
Yeah. I don't even know.
But it sounds like
if you're doing
smoothies, those are pretty darn nutritionally dense. I mean, very nutritionally dense. So as long as you're doing that, you're getting enough of your good essential fats, then, you know, I would plug your day, plug a day into one of those finders, you know, those trackers and just see where you're at, right? You may be getting more nutrition than you think. And especially if you're juicing and you're doing smoothies, that's like a wallop.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Good.
Do I have time for a couple more? Is there anybody else lined up after me?
There's nobody lined up, but we're over time already, but I'll give you.
Oh, okay. No problem. These are two fast. They're fast questions.
Okay. They're fast ones. Go for it.
I know that you mentioned something really quickly somewhere. I missed it. Did you put out a public, I'm going on a water fast thing, do you want to join me kind of thing?
Oh, I did that over Christmas. Yeah, I did that
the
day after Christmas, and I did it for like 9 days. Yeah.
Now, are you planning to do that again? And if so, are you thinking of or considering doing sort of like a little program around the water fasting thing or not?
So here's the thing, right? I did an unofficial, I'm doing this if you want to join me. I'm not monitoring anybody. I'm just sharing what my journey is. I'm not willing to do a fasting program because I think there's too much liability.
Well, and that was what I thought you were going to say. I mean, because you recommended going to medically supervised one. So,
because I think anything more than a day or two, I think you just need to monitor. And, you know, if somebody's had experience fasting before, if they're really hardy, it's much different. But I think it needs to be monitored, and I'm just not willing to take on that liability. So I just said, this is not an official program. This is just me doing this. I'm going to be posting out to do it. If anybody else wants to do it too, go for it. And the only reason I did that was I had said on one of the Facebook groups, I'm thinking about doing it. And other people said, oh, I want to do it too.
Right.
So I said, okay. Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. And I wouldn't do another one again for a while because, you know, I lost a lot of weight and it was good, but I don't think I need another one, you know, for another year or six months even. Yeah.
Right. Okay, no problem. Yeah. And the other quick, hopefully it's a quick question, this one. It has to do with one of the blood lab things here. Yeah. The GGT.
Yep.
Okay. So mine came up low, actually.
Okay. How low? Below 10?
Okay. I'm not sure whether. Hold on one minute. I'm going to just grab my sheet here. I'm not sure whether my if we're converted the same with ever the same with GGT.
I don't know.
Okay, so I'll give you the range anyway. All right, so the reference range we have is 12, between 12 and 37, U/L, whatever that is.
Okay.
So mine came out to 8.
Okay. It could be B6. So I watch your B6, and I know you've struggled with B6 for a while. So it might be your B6 keeps it low, but actually lower GGT is actually good. It means you're less toxin exposures. What's his name? I did a talk with him a while back. The guy from Best Year, he talks a lot about it in his book on toxins, about how GGT is a measure of how toxic you are. And so if you're a low toxicity, you're going to be low. Could also be that your B6 is low. But you'd usually see maybe low end of the normal range or low ALT and AST as well. But I wouldn't worry about it if,
if it's low. Okay, because when we read about what it is, it has to do with could do with bone disease or liver disease or something, right? So of course, given my situation now, you know, I'm getting paranoid, going like, where's this stuff going? You know what I mean? Like, where am I going? Am I getting now, you know, issues with that? Because my naturopath is like, oh, you got low GGT, we need to monitor it. But then when I sent my when the doctor that actually did the requisition for this, I said, you know, you didn't say anything, you didn't, because I went to see him, and I said, you know, you didn't make mention about my low GGT. I said, do I have anything to worry about given my issue? He said, no. He says, we worry about it if the GGT is too high for that issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm good then. I don't have to worry about, like,
I would say probably fine. I know that it could be like when B6 is low, you don't make enough GGT. There's normal range. Okay. My range, it's probably similar. Mine is 10. I think 10 to 30 is the range that I look for.
So we're in the same page here then?
I think we are, yeah.
Right, with the numbers.
A little bit low. I'd look at your B6 status and just monitor it. If it keeps going down, then we'd look at why.
Right, okay. So, all right, good. Because I was hoping, I was like thinking maybe things are spreading when they shouldn't be. I don't know, I was just getting paranoid. Okay, and then I have one last more question. Now, do you yourself take enzymes?
When I remember, I don't take them on a regular basis. I eat a lot of raw foods. I eat a lot of fermented foods, so I don't in general take enzymes.
Okay. And my second question to that, second part of this question is, how do you know if you need to take them?
You know, if you tend to get gassier, don't feel like you digest well, that's one reason. Overall, I think with the situation you're in, enzymes are a good thing to do just as insurance policy. To make sure that you're actually digesting the foods properly.
Right, yeah, I know. And because I don't know if it's what's going on internally right now or if it's just I'm getting issues or intolerance, not intolerance, but having a hard time digesting maybe raw foods because I'm eating a lot of raw food. I don't know, even though some of it is blended and some of it is juice, but like salad. And so I'm just getting kind of crampy and I feel kind of off.
Well, I would add the enzymes and see how you do. And also just doing a little bit of fermented food with each of your meals, too, could help.
Right. And I've been adding that a little bit more often.
Whatever. Yeah. Yep. Okay.
And you mentioned one. Did she put it on the chat, the one that you mentioned, the Transforma one? There was an enzyme that you talked about earlier.
Yeah, I think she did.
Good. So that's one that you recommend for just
Yeah, and somebody else put up a fatty one, too. But Transformation has good one, Digest. I think there's others that have good ones. I've just, you know, that's the one I have. I've used Health Force Nutritionals, but now you got me scared about looking at what they've changed their formulas to.
Yeah, and it's really hard to get their the probiotic right now. I don't know why, but it's out everywhere.
Really?
I'm going to have to give them a call and find out. And Brian Clement also, obviously, as you may know, he's very huge on high enzymes. And I do have to admit, his enzymes, like for what you get, the amount that you get for the price is amazing. And the only thing is it cost me just as much as what they cost to ship them here.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
$80. to ship a container of $80. I am not kidding. When I came, So, and it cost $80, just the thing, because there's like 1,600 of them in there, or I don't know, there's like a copious amount of them. That's amazing.
Oh, that's horrible, though. That's a lot of shipping.
Yeah. So, anyhow, we'll have to figure it out. That's right. So,
and
we'll
there might be a Flynn can post a couple that she's used. I know she uses some others that I haven't used yet, but she likes them, so they may be available in your health food stores up there.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Sounds good.
Okay.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, as always.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye-bye. All right. One last one. Laura, put her hand up again, and then we'll be done. And if there's anybody else that's posted on chat or Q&A, please alert me to it. Laura.
Yes, hello. My question is about my poop.
Oh, okay.
It's very different than you know, since I moved to Canada. I've been writing here some of the differences in my life since I moved, and maybe we can figure it out. So when I moved here first, my bowel was very soft. It almost splashed. But since, and that maybe lasted 4 days, and since I moved into my home, the bowel is maybe like 3 fingers thick. And so it's more narrow than it was in Connecticut. I stopped doing enema, which I was doing continuously in Connecticut twice a week. I walk more, and I get cardiovascular, you know, huff and puff because I'm walking uphill. I'm doing yoga every day, but before that, I wanted to say that when I wake up now, I have to go immediately, or maybe within 5-10 minutes, to the bathroom, and then once I finish my 32 ounce of water, I have to go again. So I go at least twice. My soups are grounded, which I started a month already in Connecticut. So my food, all my meals are soups.
So you're not eating any salads?
No, I am also eating salad, but not every day.
Okay. And that's the same as when you were in Connecticut?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, I started making soups because I was seeing some of my kale in the bowel.
So you blended it because your teeth weren't doing the job. All right. So, is there a change in odor?
No, it doesn't smell too much.
Okay. And what about like greasiness? Is there any grease in the bowl?
No, I don't see any grease. But maybe I don't know how it looks like.
Yeah, you'd notice grease. I mean, it would look greasy. You'd have a oil film floating on the bowl after you poop.
No.
So I would just monitor it. I don't know that there's anything I could come up with that says, oh, this has changed. This is going to, but you've changed. You've moved. It's a big change in your environment. I mean, I think it's good that you have the urge to go first thing in the morning. That's kind of natural and normal. At least within the first half hour. And, you know, 3 finger widths is not super skinny. I mean, that's pretty good size. 3 to 4 finger widths is what we target for. If it was much bigger than that, then that's pretty hard to pass if it gets much bigger than that. So, you know, I wouldn't be so concerned. I'd just let it be and just watch it. And there's nothing alarming that I'm hearing.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't think it was alarming, but it's just different.
It's different, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'll monitor. And I have another question about the heart, but maybe it's too late for you. So about the aortic valve. My aunt is having her aortic valve failing, and in 2 weeks she will put a new one in with catheterization. And it seems like my grandmother had the same thing. So I wanted to go over that so that my family can, well, especially me, can maybe protect if it is in my DNA. And and I wanted to know what is it, why does it fail?
Well, it's usually, if it fails, it's usually a congenital defect that wasn't caught early. And in, you know, if it's a ventricular, it's usually caught real early on because people can't survive. Well, I had a niece who was born with a ventricular septal defect, and she had to have it repaired when she was a year old. But it's kind of a complicated topic to go into at when we're a half an hour over on this, and I'd prefer to talk about it on another call. So, I mean, it's usually there is a genetic defect that people are born with, and it's just noticed later on.
Mm-hmm.
So,
She's now in her 80s. So,
There you go.
She made it. Okay, I'll ask the question again.
Okay, sounds good. All right. Thank
you,
Laura.
Have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Dr. Simmons.
All right, everybody. So we're like a half an hour over. Thank you for hanging out and asking such great questions. And if I missed your question, hopefully I didn't, because I asked Lynn to tell me if I missed any questions.
Yep. And actually, there were a couple that, and I put them in the Q&A, but I didn't hear, and she said it was Daniela. One of them, is it true that you should take your minerals separately from vitamins?
You don't do that in food. So, you know, I think there's certain vitamins and certain minerals that are going to be incompatible to take together. But, I mean, it's really hard to live that way and be able to take everything separately. And when you eat, you don't take your vitamins and minerals separately. So, you know, maybe there's certain vitamins and minerals you should take separately. But I'm not a big fan of complicating things.
Right. And then the other was, is the homemade liposomal C as good as the professional?
I've heard that it's not. That, because the homemade is used making it using an ultrasonic machine. And my understanding, I read, and of course it was literature from companies that sell it, so hard to say, but that it actually didn't work as well.
I did a refresh, and there looks to be some questions. And I don't remember you answering these. There are pillows to so-called save one space. Are you familiar, and do they work? Best way to keep lines and wrinkles at bay?
I have no idea. Never heard of them.
Okay, I haven't either. Neither. Does daily wearing of comfortable high heels affect one's body? You did. Okay, then you got the rest of them.
Yeah, I got that.
I knew we talked about heels, but I couldn't remember if you did that one. So.
Yep.
Alrighty.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. And you've handled everybody else on the on the chat part.
Yep.
Okay. I didn't notice if Janine was there to post what she had done with the CBD oil.
She would have said something. Yeah,
she
I didn't
have.
See her either.
She mustn't have been there. We'll find out from her and post it. All right. Well, thank you, everybody. I'm going to stop the recording, and I'm going to open up the line, and I will just open up the line to say goodbye to each other. Thank you for being here, everybody. Bye.
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 Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.